Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mindshift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Jonah Mixon Webster is a poet and a conceptual and sound artist from Flint, Michigan. And listening to him read and perform his poetry is an experience. His debut poetry collection is titled Stereotype. Jonah Mixon Webster, welcome to Forum.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
We're so glad to have you here. And I'm so excited to learn that you prepared to read a poem for us, the poem Incubation, a 5-minute meditation on Flint's water crisis. Did you want to say anything about the poem first or just go right into it?
I think I'll just go right into it and then maybe we can talk about it.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, perfect. Incubation. It is 2020 and the city of Flint says, don't boil the water. And I refuse to drink a single drop from any tap or bottle now. I've stopped bathing completely, waiting for rain to slick my skin back on. I eat accessory fruits mainly from cardboard and cover the rashes on my face with coconut oil to appear more alive. I sit beneath a sun lamp, touching no one. It is 2016 and the city of Flint says, boil the water. My mother lays her head in a couch of her own hair, pulls back a scar from the watermark in her leg, the scalp of her knee giving to the bloody lock. Faucet water hardens into a fang, attacks, slowly unfleshes the body all together. This week, my niece goes live on Facebook, filming her son running in an errant stupor, bad as he is already, vaulting up an obstacle of leather, a base from which to rehearse flight. He lands, runs onto the carpet, the screech following his shade into the mat. He moves his joints to the finish, muscle where his mind angles the floor. It is 2014 and the city of Flint says, boil the water. My niece, great nephew and I bowl metallic mac and cheese from the aluminum. We all smash it heavy and wet the taste in the soup of our mouth. TJ plays the last noodle with his finger, consumes it, says, where's the meat? It is 2017 and the city of Flint says, boil the water. I undo the gauze from the stitched together incision below my navel. The procedure, an embolization to loosen the knot of veins growing inside me. And to clean the wound, I use a room temperature bottle of purified drinking water, more gauze, and a plain bar of antibacterial soap. I apply a small amount of Bactine to the area and stick on a hospital-grade bandage. I press onto it lightly for 10 seconds. It is 2014 and the city of Flint says, don't boil the water. I lie into a nightmare of sound. Again, there is no rest. The whole house and hood is washed in the voice of some agent installed in the park burn projects adjacent from the crib, tucked in the half of an acre, an alarm, a holler on blast every night from 10 p.m. until we all sleep it off. This lasts for a year, despite complaint. Another day starts like this, stretched by the mile of voice sounding from the intersection of Pearson and Cloverlawn, throwing itself to the undead, which lay some distance elsewhere. The broke record of it, in the air, in the water, in the dream. Warning, warning. You have violated an area protected by security. The authorities have been notified. Leave immediately. Warning,
Warning, you have violated an area protected by security. The authorities have been notified. Leave immediately. Warning. You have violated an area protected by security. The authorities have been notified. Leave immediately. Warning. You have violated an area protected by security. The authorities have been notified. Leave immediately. Warning. You have violated an area protected by security. The authorities have been notified. Leave immediately. Warning. Leave immediately. Warning. Leave immediately.
It is 2015 and the city of Flint says, boil the water. I returned to the city for the first time since the story surfaced. Riding through the hood, crossing at the corner of Pearson and DuPont, stands a string of neon stanchions, military servicemen, a gaggle of pallets, a gaggle of bottled waters wishing us well. It is 2018 and the city of Flint says, don't boil the water. Soon, a new narrative, lead exposed as opposed to lead poisoned, the spin of an incident as accident, a posture to say, I guess we all were just a little naive, as counter to, yes, we did this with our full knowing, education and training notwithstanding. Surely you can trust us now. It is 2020 and the city of Flint says, boil the water. Bills, flyers, pamphlets, bags, bills, manuals, mailers, bills, boxes, bills, bottles, bottle caps, bills, a junk flood in the streets, overflowing our houses now. Every piece of litter and literature yelling, consume, consume. It is 2019 and the voice on the radio says, have you or your family been affected by the Flint water crisis? Does your child's blood level show evidence of lead poisoning? Have you noticed any rashes or developmental issues in your child? If so, you may be eligible to file a claim and receive compensation for you and your child's suffering. Please call us at the law offices of, it is 2015 and the city of Flint says, boil the water. My boy Q posts a picture of his back, bubbling with fissures and an even spread, having bathed in the city's northeast waters. The contagion carries itself into the host, bearing witness to a feast of skin and other soft metals. Thank you.
That's my guest, Jonah Mixon-Webster, reading his poem, Incubation. Jonah Mixon-Webster, what role does Flint play in your writing? What role has it taken up in your writing?
Most of the work in Stereotype, and including, and especially the section that deals with the Flint water crisis, are just derived from real life experiences. Growing up in Flint, I've had so many ups and downs, so many ambivalent moments. I mean, I once suffered a great, tremendous deal of pain being outed at 9 years old in a pretty rough, you know, the roughest side of town. And then trying to navigate that while also experiencing, I mean, just a beautiful and rich culture that Flint has. I started writing poetry. I started playing music in Flint. So Flint gave me my ear, gave me my musicality in these ways, the teachers that I met there. So I feel like, you know, this work was a way to honor both the real suffering that I experienced and other people experienced in Flint, and also the real beauty and joy that we are also, you know, helping to cultivate and to create in the city.
We're talking with Jonah Mixon-Webster, poet, educator, and conceptual and sound artist, about his poetry collection, Stereotype, which won the PEN America and Joyce Osterweil Award and was a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award for Gay Poetry. And if you, our listeners, have a reaction you want to share or a question for Jonah Mixon-Webster, you can always call us at 866-733-6786. You can email us forum@kqed.org. You can post your comments on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. It's interesting, as you talk about just that really complicated relationship you have with Flint, it reminds me of what also feels like a complicated relationship you have with what is the title of your poetry collection, Stereotypes. One of the things that I found in reading your poetry is that while you are constantly disrupting and upending and challenging stereotypes, you are also in many ways acknowledging the power of stereotypes and the complicity that fuels that power. I wonder if that is part of your relationship to what stereotypes are? Like, what kind of power do you feel like they hold? And what power do they hold, do you feel like, on you?
That's such a great question. Thank you so much. You know, stereotypes, I feel like, are the kind of major the major mechanism of colonization, oppression. Before any of those kind of endeavors can really be fully achieved, the stereotype is the primary force that at once justifies and reifies the violence that are done to people that which have stereotypes, you know, grossly imposed upon them. So I feel like stereotypes are extremely powerful. They are the kind of the subconscious, conscious processing, system apparatus that we have become experts in. We are experts in stereotyping people and ourselves. And then as far as, you know, myself goes, when I was trying to navigate, you know, these really difficult, ambivalent spaces, I realized that I was just mimicking, right, the images and the affectations that I saw everyone else do, right, that was based on what a Black man should be and should look like in order to survive, in order to navigate not only the very immediate local arena, that space, but also the very large social arena of this country.
The way you write stereotype on the cover of your book, it's written where the word type is written in all caps and parentheses. What led you to treat the word stereotype this way?
It's a really fun question too. I really was trying to draw a very strong, precise, like, line between what's occurring and what's happening, right, when we are encountering stereotypes. And so for me, you know, kind of, you know, separating this kind of word out was at once an approach to thinking about how I was working with the material, the sonic material, the visual material on the page, with the, you know, with the type, right? So stereotype is a major sonic project also as well for me. And so kind of like separating those two things out kind of attends to, right, the way I'm using these materials, right, to get different angles on how the process of stereotypes work, and to, you know, to strike a stronger chord with, you know, the implicit biases that might be, you know, lurking within one's psyche. But also the etymology of those words, stereo, you know, thinking from the Greek stereos, means solid, right? And then type, which comes from the typos, typos meaning strike. So, you know, thinking about this solid strike that the stereotypes create, as we're thinking about, you know, these archetypal kind of images of Black people in America, as also we're thinking about this process of printmaking, and constantly reproducing the same thing, right? Using, you know, thinking about the actual stereotype machine, right? And so this, the trying to allow the language to perform some of its very ingrained, you know, innate conceptual energy. I wanted to, separate those out, you know, think about how concretized stereotypes become through this, you know, this solidification, this amalgamation of images, sounds, right, affects, things like that. But then also in this process of typifying people, right? How typification, right? These, you know, having to create a type over and over and over again, and permutations of this type or these types.
So, the way that you play with words on a page or experiment with them to try to evoke the meanings that you are describing now is really something that listeners get if they open your book. And amazingly, as you say, it was very much a sonic experience. So then they also get a different experience when they listen to the audiobook, which is what I did. And then an even more different experience, Jonah Mixon-Webster, when I saw you performing some of your poetry in YouTube videos. It's a different experience there as well. And I think it's incredible that you're able to achieve all of that. And I want to remind our listeners, we're talking with poet Jonah Mixon-Webster, and you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Let me go to a call, if I could. Lois in Piedmont, join us. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
What's on your mind,
I'm
Lois?
I so appreciate your work, young man. I lived in Flint from the time I was a child until I was 12. I went back for a wedding, and then about 5 years ago, I went back to visit family and friends there after this water crisis, and I just cannot believe that the state imposed this horrific thing on my community. And I just appreciate what you've written.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh my goodness, thank you. Bless you.
Lois, thank you. There is that moment in the poem that you read, Incubation, when you depict the government warning and you have this sort of like incessant and accelerating pace to the government warning, which really evoked for me just the drumbeat of worry and fear that must have been in the minds of Flint residents. Do you think about how a poem will sound? Like when, I mean, in the process, do you think about how a poem will sound? Does it even precede the writing?
It does. Woo! Thank you, Lois, for that. Again, I'm just kind of feeling it too. But that was one of the most kind of like horrible, frightening, horrific compounding elements of the water crisis was all this other kind of warfare that was taking place in Flint. A lot of people don't even know about. So some of this, like this psychological warfare, we know there was biological warfare happening. The psychological warfare, having this alarm, but you know, there we went, it was so many complaints made to the city council about it. It was like, is this an actual alarm or is this a sound installation? And what alarm do you know or have you heard of that doesn't turn off or that plays every night from 10 p.m. to 8 in the morning?
Yeah.
It can be heard for a mile and a half.
And the long tail of that impact that both you and Lois are expressing is so clear to me. There is, Jonah Mixon-Webster, a lot of internal anguish and stereotype. But there was one poem where you felt really free to me, and it's titled On Juking with Another Black Boy. We just have 2 minutes left, and I'm wondering if you could just say a little bit about what space you were in with that particular poem, because it does strike such a different chord.
Yeah, I think that poem was also a way to honor Danez Smith, who in a lot of ways, their work has just, I feel like allowed me, gave me the permission to be more of myself, be fully more myself. And so just to have this experience, we're dancing together at a party. I'm like feeling, completely relinquished from the duty and the burden of, performing this thing, right? And so I wanted to use that poem to capture, what that really means, right? So much of the book, it does talk to straightforwardly, explicitly, and it alludes to, violence between, Black men, but, I needed work in stereotype to also complicate that with, affection, love, and just that feel good, moment where you're just at a party and you're dancing with somebody that looks like you, and they see you and you see them. And that kind of sublimity, how do you try to capture that? And so that was a space that I felt could open up some other possibilities.
Do you feel like putting stereotype out in the world gets you closer to having that be more of a factor in your life?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of things. A lot of things that stereotype allowed me to say and to express that I couldn't, or that it took 20 years to understand.
Well, thank you for putting it out into the world, Jonah Mixon-Webster. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Thank you all for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for their comments. Robert writes, from one Flint expat writer to another, great work. Thank you also to Caroline Smith for producing our segment. You've been listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.